This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Jason Cutter here again. Welcome to the after show. I have my friend and very persistent member of my network, Mr. Adam Sinkus, on the after show. He is from a purpose partnership. Adam, welcome to the after show.
So glad. It was so much fun in the first part of the show, and I'm excited for this part of the show to come full circle.
Now, for the sake of complete transparency and some dare say authenticity, normally in the world of podcast magic of what we do, and for my shows in this season here that we're doing, is I do part one and part two. It is in one time block, usually in a 1 hour time block, where we record part one like we did with your partner, Chuck, and do that for 30, 35 minutes, hit stop, hit record as fast as I can, do the second part, do it all in one time block, post it on two different days, and that's amazing. For this here, because I thought it would be fun to kind of set some context for people who are watching the video, might notice that we look a little bit different today instead of the continuation of the first part. And it's because we recorded one on a Friday. Because we had so many technical issues, even with a 1.5 hour time block, it still took us 45 minutes to get started, left us 45 minutes. I wanted to make sure we did some gold here. And so here we are on the following Monday from when Friday. And so we have a new time block. And it's kind of the continuation. We won't sit here and pretend like, it was instantly happened. But, you know, a weekend happened in between. And funny enough, we were chatting right beforehand, talking about the next storm that's coming. The last podcast, we talked about the previous storm that you went through. And then we're just chatting about the next one that's coming later this week. So,
yeah,
let's rock and roll with the after show.
That sounds good.
So, in that first conversation, there was so much that we didn't get to that was on kind of my list of topics and things to chat about. And I think one of the biggest things is talking about and continue the conversation where you mentioned a lot of stuff about motivating teams. We talked about intrinsic versus extrinsic. You know, I think one of the things that jumps in my mind a lot is I'm thinking about, especially over the weekend, I'm thinking, like, why don't teams get that? Why don't managers and leaders get that? And we talked to obviously about being inside and just motivating people, like we want to be motivated. But, you know, you deal with leaders and teams all the time. You see them like just not understanding how to create happy and motivated teams. Why else does that happen? Or what is the advice that you want to give to people where it's like, please stop doing this? If you could shake them all right now, everyone listening, and be like, stop this or do this.
Yeah. So that's a really great question. And I'm going to answer the first part, which is why do managers do this? It's because pizza lunch is really easy to execute, right? I got to call Domino's on Friday morning and go, hey, we're going to buy lunch for the team. I need 8 pizzas and here's my order, right? And that is really, really easy to execute. The problem is that most of our employees could care less about pizza lunch. And most of them are more engaged by, a little bit more in their paycheck, a little bit more training, a little more opportunity, in all honesty, with a remote work world now, right? Pizza lunch is getting to be a lot harder to execute. So that's, I think, why we have those extrinsic motivators, because they tend to be they're the low hanging fruit, right? It's the easy grab. But as a leader, we need to step away from that, right? You know, if you're buying pizza lunch for your team every week, guess what? It's not special anymore. It doesn't mean anything. It just means this is our weekly pizza lunch. Right. But, in the case of our team, we work fully remote. If I just randomly, send Chuck a DoorDash, Starbucks coffee, like just out of the blue, is thank you. Thanks for being a great partner. Like that means a lot more. There's an authenticity behind that, a genuine approach behind that. Right. And so, it's the opportunity to, how do we build that authentic thank you for our team, right? And I think that's where we get lost. And so when we do things repeatedly, the same thing over and over again, right? Buying lunch is a great example because that happens quite frequently. It's there's no value to it. It's not genuine at that point. It's just part of the process. So get away from part of the process and find ways to uniquely reach out. Send a book, right? This is one of my favorite things to do. I send books. Recently, I've been sending out The Energy Bus. And if you've never read The Energy Bus, I highly, highly recommend it. Fantastic book written in a parable style about the 10 lessons you need to know about motivating your team. And, you know, the fact that you can send that to somebody, it's a super easy read. They read through it. And then I tell them, think about somebody that you know that would benefit from reading that book and pass it on to them. Right. And now I've created not only an impactful moment for that employee, but I've also created an impactful moment for somebody else.
I love that. And I think that's so important, especially what you said about the pizza lunch and anything like that, where you just do that every week and you do that consistently, and then people start to expect it and it loses its value because it's now just a thing, right? It becomes expected. And instead, what can you do? I love how you said, like, build authentic thank you. Like, how do you surprise people with something at random? And I think also the key too is, and this is what you talked about in the first part, was also understanding what motivates people, what they want, their intrinsic side, right? And, and, you know, obviously, depending on the size of your team, it's also doing things that are different for everybody. Who's a coffee drinker? Who loves, you know, a good afternoon burrito like I do? You know, who wants something different as you're doing that, you know, thank you to everybody? And I love what you said about the book and sending that out. I think it's so true, especially in the remote world. How do you do that in person? You know, obviously, it's difficult as well, because you've got a lot of people you're dealing with in that moment, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other thing that we often forget as leaders is those meaningful touch points that aren't related to work, right? So one thing that I've always done, whether remote, in person, is I always create a genuine moment in everybody's day. And what I mean by that is, I literally, when I was on site managing a team of 25 people in a call center, I literally would get up from my desk. I had every day a scheduled slot, about half an hour time. And I'd walk around and just, hey, thank you. Great to see you today. Like, just those little things, asking about things that are going on in their life, not necessarily interrupting and having like a deep conversation, but just the consistency of that genuine hello, greeting, welcome, thank you, all that type of stuff, started to build a level of relationship that, you know, takes it beyond the, you know, you're just my boss and all you want to do is see my numbers.
Yeah. And I think that one's important. I, in the office workspace, used to do that every morning when I would come in, if I came in after people were already there, or I would get up and do it by walking around. But I love what you said there. And I think this is a great reminder for people in leadership roles, is to do that and be intentional. It can be both authentic and intentional, but to put that time into just being there and chatting with people, and those, you know, basically creating the water cooler moments, even if it's walking up and down the rows. And if it's in a full remote thing, it's just sending a message, sending a chat, you know, sending a video message or a voice message, something where, for me, the whole point of it was both the relationships, but also the, I don't want you to think anytime and every time I come to see you or I send you a message, there must be something wrong, or we need to talk about something serious, right? Like, every time the principal calls you in, I must be in trouble. I want it to feel like you don't know, and just try to assume the positive. I think that's one of the challenges with like HR, is HR usually doesn't meet with somebody unless there's a problem. And then people just get conditioned that whenever HR calls on somebody, then right? Like, is there a box going to be ready for them, or what's going to be happening? And I think it's important to uncondition people to, like, you know, some kind of negative association.
You know, I used to make a joke out of that when I send emails for one-on-one meetings or touch points like that, is the subject line was always, ooh, you got called to the principal's office. Well, every time, and you know, just turning it into a joke, like totally just, you know, cleared the air, kept things light, you know, didn't matter the seriousness of the conversation at that point, unless, you know, obviously there was, you know, big issues going on, but, you know, just a normal one-on-ones, things like that. That just lightness opened up the conversation, opened up, you know, the potential of what we could do in that conversation.
Yeah. And I think it's really important for managers, for leaders to be aware of that. Most managers and leaders have bosses as well. And so, you know what it's like when the CEO calls you in and, you know, you get in trouble. And then the next time they call you in, you're like, uh-oh, right? Even if you don't think you're doing something wrong, it's like, are they going to be happy or not? And so you want to make sure that you don't ever set that condition with your team, which is with when I'm calling on you or emailing you or want to do a one-on-one, that it's bad, right? And I think it's very important to set that expectation, assuming, obviously, you don't want all your meetings to be perceived that way. When it comes to the team, I know one of the things that we've spoken about offline is the numbers game in sales. Mm-hmm. Where do you see that from a leadership perspective, both with the team, in sales in general? What's your numbers game take?
So I believe that sales, there is an aspect of the numbers game in sales, right? You know, I mean, there's proven statistical information out there that says this volume equates to this typically, right? And so there's a lot of value to that. That being said, when I'm having the conversations with my team, I mean, we will always get back to the numbers and the behaviors that I need for performance, but I'm more worried about what they think they're being successful on, what they think their challenges are, what solutions they're coming up with for their challenges, and what their long-term plans are, right? Because when the conversation goes there and they go, you know, maybe they're struggling, right? And not meeting their sales numbers. But when we talk about challenges and where they want to go, now I can relate that back to what's important to them. You know, so if they want to become a sales manager, they want to clear, you know, 250K in sales this year, you know, okay, cool. Well, do you think this behavior or this challenge is going to allow you to do that? Right. You know, and now I've made it personal to what they're trying to accomplish. And so you should always be having the numbers conversation, but the numbers shouldn't be leading it. It's the behaviors that lead up to the numbers that should be leading that conversation.
Where do you see that also playing, not just in the here's you as a salesperson, and then what is the, you know, the behavior slash numbers for you in your sales role, but leaders and viewing their team that way as well? Because one of the things I see is a lot of leaders, sales leaders, they don't want to admit it. They don't want to know, they don't want to think they're playing it, but they're playing a numbers game with how many hire 10 people and hope that so many work out, right?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I think we have to step back and we have to look at the intrinsic or what the true role of that leader is, right? And depending on where what level in the organization they're in, what their true responsibility is different, right? So a CEO, their responsibility is to make the company profitable, right? So everything that they talk about is how do we become more profitable, drive more revenue, and increase market share. Those are going to be kind of the three things that most CEOs are leading conversations with, right? You know, as we get down the organization, at a certain point, there's I call it the teeter-totter managers, right? And these are the people that are balancing my higher-ups are all driving revenue and profitability and market share. And everybody below me is driving people performance, right? And so we have to first go, okay, where in the organization do you fit, right? Are you responsible for the overall success of the organization? Is that your key responsibility of your role? Or are you responsible for the people that are going to drive that success. And so that's the first part of it. The second part of it is once we establish that, right, if we're driving people, we always have to lead with that humanistic approach. We always have to lead with their motivations, how their motivations tie into the overall success of the team and of the company, right? So, you know, this is why I always talk about goals. And I may not always have the answer of how their personal goals can drive into the company goals right then and there in that conversation. But you better believe I'm going to go back after that conversation and I'm going to think about it and I'm going to talk to some people about it. And I'm going to go, how can we align this with our goals as a company to be successful? And then we'll go have that conversation at another time once we've figured out what that alignment is. Right. You know, I've had people legitimately work for me say, you know, like, I don't need this job. I'm here because I want to get out of the house. You know, like, seriously, it was a call center job, and her husband was a lawyer, and they were pretty well off. And she's like, I just needed something to do 40 hours a week. Like, I was bored twiddling my thumbs at home. And I'm like, cool. Well, your goal is to just enjoy people. So guess what? I put her in a role that was very people centric, so she could talk to as many people as she wanted to in a day. Right. You know, that helped me out as an organization. I was actually able to pilot a program that we were running with her. And, you know, aligned that she was just there because she just wanted that social aspect of being at work. So
I love it. Well, and I love what you said too about the teeter-totter manager, right? I've never thought of it in that term, which is, all right, I got the influence or the push from the people above me. Then I got the people below me who need to be the people. And it's like, we got the performance versus the people. And where is that? Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important. I think one of the things that companies do really wrong so often is they make the wrong management, usually closer to the front line, too weighed down in the admin and the bureaucracy and or whatever it might be, right? Where that frontline manager needs to be focused on the people and helping them win. They need to be in the trenches, keeping their troops alive every day and helping them succeed on the battlefield, right? Like, literally, it can feel like that. Not in email hell or meetings or reports or anything like that, right? That's what that's what gets their team killed, right? if it was in the battlefield.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? You know, I think at a certain point you have that teeter-totter manager and then all the managers below that, all the pressure is numbers, numbers, numbers. And it's those frontline leaders are the ones that have to translate numbers into behavior, because numbers at the end of the day is a symptom of a behavior, right? Even, you know, even if we're talking, you know, sales numbers, we're talking any kind of numbers that we're tracking people's performance on, those are simply symptoms of a behavior, right? If we're talking about close rate, you know, it starts off with, did I make enough calls in that day? That's a behavior, right? And there's behaviors that lead to whether I did or I didn't. Then we look at, you know, how many of those close. There's behaviors that are assigned with what a successful close looks like versus what an unsuccessful close looks like. You know, and so we have to step back and go, numbers are simply a symptom of a deeper behavior. Our job as a people leader is to dive down into that, that behavior that's driving the numbers.
Makes sense. I think that's so important. I think that teeter-totter manager principle, companies listening, any sales leaders, business owners listening, like, where is that in the org chart? Draw that line there and then separate kind of the focus and what somebody is held to in order to succeed and win. I think that's so important. Let's shift a little bit. Where do you see, I don't want to say consumers, I'm going to say buyers, I'm going to say customers, because it could be B2C, could be B2B, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Where do you see them going over, you know, it's the end of 2022. So let's say over the next year, as far as what they're looking for from companies, what do they want? What do they expect? What do you think?
So I think it's an interesting question. I think there's a couple of things at play here, right? So obviously ticket size is a big big piece of this, right? You know, the way you handle a high ticket deal versus, you know, $29.95 a month offering is going to be drastically different. But I think what's key is that people don't want to be sold to, they want to be shown the value of. And so as we guide, and this applies, I think, broader than just even in sales, right? You know, we don't want that cold DM on LinkedIn. We don't want that, even the phone call, the email spam. We don't, you know, consumers are looking for, show me the value of what you do and what value that brings to my business or my life, or, you know, whether it be B2B, B2C. And so how we show that, I think, you know, is through building your authentic view, right? So, you know, what does that mean? That means, you know, showing up, you know, in the B2B space, especially, you know, showing up online and providing upfront value. You know, LinkedIn, you know, the great LinkedIn influencers are a prime example of that. They give away what seems like the farm, but, you know, I know for a fact that's only the tip of the iceberg, right? You know, in the consumer world, right? You know, it's how does your widget, how does your thing, how does your service directly provide a value to me? You know, in the case of the storm that just came through, right? You know, roofers can go knock door to door because, you know, and just be like, hey, look, I see damage on your roof. We'd like to tarp it. We'd like to talk about getting that roof replaced, right? There's an immediate value there. Yeah, it's a cold approach, but it's a cold approach on something that has high value to you, your home, and the safety and sanctity of your home. And so, you know, so that's, I think, the key when we're thinking about sales communication is, how are we driving that high value to whomever we're trying to speak to?
Got it. Of course, I agree. And I love how you said that. And I think that's so important, is leading with that value. And then obviously something that's going to be valuable, and then moving someone forward if it does make sense, if they see enough of that value. And I think that's a big difference, right? Instead of the cold approach, I think that's one of the reasons why so many people just don't answer their phones, don't like the emails. I know I have a love-hate relationship with LinkedIn and the kind of stuff that I receive, and, you know, do well to shut those things down. So I think that's fascinating. I love that part. All right, shifting one more time, because this is what I'm also really curious about. And, you know, not in terms of business and sales and all the other topics, but of course, this is the after show. So, you know, we talk about random stuff also. Is your relationship and partnership with Chuck, which he and I talked in the episode that we did together. Chuck Hester, if anyone hasn't heard that one, make sure to check out that part one and part two. But, you know, he on his side was thinking, hey, like at this point in my life, like, I've been in business for so long, I don't need a partner. Like I got it. I know what I know. And then he was very open about how, like, he wasn't thinking about it, and then it happened, and it's like been the greatest thing, because he, you know, has a partner and someone to bounce things off. How has that been for you? Were you looking for that? Where does that fit in? You know, because there's a lot of people that say, like myself, it's solo. It's like, all right, do I get a partner? You know, I can't do everything myself. I also can't see everything myself. It's not even just can't do it. It's about can't see it. And so, you know, I'd love to hear from your side, like how that came about. Obviously, the you guys each have your strengths, and, you know, where that fits in.
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, it wasn't something that I was openly like really thinking about when it happened. It just kind of like popped into my head. So we worked on Pay It Forward Tuesdays for about a year and a half before we joined forces with a purpose partnership. And, you know, it was one of those things where offering all these great services through Pay It Forward Tuesdays, and consulting and helping underserved small businesses and nonprofits. And Chuck calls me up one day at this point, you know, we've developed a friendship, and he calls me up and he goes, look, like, this is what's going on. I'm frustrated. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what to do next. And, you know, so I kind of consoled him through that call, and we had a good call. And the outcome was positive of that. A couple of days later, it just kind of was like, it hit me like, you know, Like somebody, like my wife smacked me upside the head with a book. It hit me. I'm like, we've been providing these great consulting services for underserved nonprofits, small businesses, startups. And we could like do this and make some money and not just do it for free, which is what we were doing through Pay It Forward Tuesdays and what we continue to do through that. So I called them up and I said, look, like, here's the opportunity. Here's what I think. Your opportunity has changed and it's very clear you don't want to go back to the corporate life. I don't particularly care for the corporate life. Let's give this a go. Let's see what this looks like for a couple of months and then we'll go from there. And we just kind of saw the alignment of value and vision from what we'd previously been working on together and go, let's go at this, you know, and see. And we saw early success and we continue to see success. And so it was just kind of a strategic alignment. Like sometimes I think the best laid plans are also the worst laid plans. And sometimes when we take a spontaneous risk, we open up doors and possibilities, because with the amount of stuff that we're doing right now and the people that we're talking to, I don't know that I could personally do this all on my own.
What were you each doing prior to joining forces on this?
So I was working with a call center company doing data analytics. And Chuck was working with a marketing agency out of North Carolina. And like I said, his circumstances changed and I was going corporate life. I'm tired of the call center corporate life. So.
I love it. Well, I truly enjoy and appreciate the fact that you guys were both doing this thing where you were just giving and giving and giving and doing the Tuesday content and event. And it's just like, then it's like, hey, wait a second, this is resonating. Right. And I think, you know, instead of field of dreamsing it, where it's like, let's build it because we're amazing and then people will flock to us. Let's do this and put this out there and then, you know, see what the market actually wants and then what we enjoy. And if we, you know, it's dating before getting married.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a second, this works. Let's give this a go. And then you guys, you know, actually did it instead of just talked about it.
Oh yeah. And it's been an absolute blast. Like I said, you know, I don't know that individually either one of us could have done this and seen the success that we've seen so quickly, you know, on our own. So, you know, that to me shows the value of us coming together and, you know, going through the hurricane, especially, right. You know, it's like, normally I would have been like panicked because not just because of the hurricane stuff, but because like, well, I got clients, like I have to service and figure this out and communicate with, and I can barely communicate with my family to let them know I'm safe and okay, let alone clients, you know, that have paid me for services. And so, yeah, but it was refreshing and revitalizing to know that, you know, Chuck was there taking care of our clients, communicating with our clients. And even though it slowed down progress on a couple of our clients, you know, there's clear communication there and I didn't have to worry about it, you know, and that the value of that in itself, I think is huge, because I know so many business owners that are just stuck in like, you know, if they had to take 10 days off unplanned, they would just probably actually, most of them would have a heart attack.
Yep. Or shut down or lose all their clients or have nothing to show for that 10 days off, right? Planned or unplanned.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the power of partnership in my mind.
Wow. What a good segue. Well, speaking of which, for people who want to find out more, I know I mentioned it, a purpose partnership, but people can go to apurposepartnership.com with an A in the beginning. If they want to connect with you, kind of like how you and I found each other, LinkedIn, I know, is a good place. People can find you, Adam Sinkus, S-I-N-K-U-S. Any other content, any other fun stuff you have out there, the, you know, other call to actions for people, or just those two main places?
Don't forget to hop onto the podcast world and check out the Winning Tactics podcast as well. That's my podcast where we talk all things small business and help Main Street America thrive and survive.
I love it. Make sure to check that out everywhere podcasts are sold. Again, Adam, thank you for this. A lot happens behind the scenes in the world of making podcasts happen. We had a very persistent journey through a lot of stuff, and I appreciate you and being here and, you know, just being supportive of this and then wanting to share so much. And I appreciate it. So thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And for everyone listening, make sure to check out part one, where Adam and I spoke about all kinds of things, business management, leadership related. You can find that on the YouTube channel, Jason Cutter on YouTube. You can find it everywhere podcasts for the Authentic Persuasion Show. So however you found this, make sure to check out the other options for that. And until next time, keep selling with authentic persuasion.